occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Jesus replied, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road. When he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him, bandaged his wounds, pouring on olive oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said. 'When I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. This is one of Jesus' parables. Parable is one of those terms that gets tossed around a lot. Sometimes I think without full understanding of what it's really about. Sometimes it's just referred to as a simple metaphor, as if Jesus said little things like, "Be a bridge over troubled water," and the metaphor would somehow make all the difference. But a parable is so much more and really something different. Parables, they take you down one direction, and all of a sudden there is something that is jarring, transforming. You think you're going to get a story like a story that you'd hear from a parent or a benevolent grandfather or grandmother, something nice, but it takes you further. This parable starts out, the man gets mugged. A man gets mugged and he's left to die in a ditch. 2 people pass by, and to be fair, they had perfectly good excuses. You know, in those days, clergy were very important. What they saw was tremendously important, and they had to get to the temple, and if they were to stop, well, there's a whole long line of excuses they have. But you have to ask yourself, as you hear this story today, who has the most noble cause? Today, who would get the bye? Who would walk past without feeling much guilt? Because their cause was so noble. Their day planner was full. They had patients to see. They had clients to care for. They had balance sheets to balance. They had young minds to shape and inspire. They had widgets to build. I mean, you can just hear excuse after excuse after excuse. And when we get together with other people, what do we talk about but how busy we are, how full our schedules are? It gives us the most noble of excuses. So this is a passage that on one level asks, so what's your excuse for passing on by? That kind of hits home, doesn't it? Well, then the parable turns into something like a morality tale, something to sort of nudge the conscience a little bit. What was that line out of that Mike Douglas movie? Greed is good. Well, for this passage, you could leave it at the level of just saying, guilt is good, you know? A little bit of guilt will help move you in the right direction. But that's really not a parable either, is it? There's got to be something more, something profoundly different. This week in Weatherford, Texas, maybe you saw it on the news, in Weatherford, Texas, at least 8 inmates were waiting to appear in court. They were in a court staging cell behind a glass wall, and they could look out and see the guard who was watching them, the guard with his gun and keys. He's sitting outside their cell in his own room by himself. And all of a sudden, the prisoners see that the guard slumps down and falls over. It seems kind of surreal. They don't know what's going on. And then all of a sudden, the prisoners realize the guard was having a heart attack. There's nobody else around. They try to yell and scream, but nobody hears them down in this place. There's liable to be nobody who's going to come down for another 15 minutes or so, and by that time, the guard is going to be beyond any help. And so these prisoners manage to break out of their cell, knowing that that could get them in trouble, knowing that that could get them shot. They break out of the cell, they go out, they're in this outer area, they bang on the walls, they make a ruckus until the other deputies upstairs hear them and come running, thinking that there's a fight downstairs. The first deputy can't figure out what's going on. He herds all the prisoners back into their cell. Then the others come and they see the guard slumped over and they begin to figure out what's going on. One of them starts CPR. Then the paramedics come. They have to shock the man's heart to bring him back to life, but he turns out okay. Nick Kelton was the name of one of the inmates who led the way in the prisoners breaking out of their cell. Nick Kelton is a meth addict who's been in prison at least 4 times. He and the others probably saved that guard's life. So I ask you the question, who was guarding whom? Who is the neighbor in that story? Who's the hero? A 4-time recidivist and his fellow cons, a repeat meth addict. He's the one in the role of the Good Samaritan. It's the Samaritan who proves to be neighbor. And Samaritan is code word for enemy. People who are the greatest threat. Remember, all the good guys passed on by, and they had great excuses why they passed on by. But it's the enemy who's the hero, who proves to be neighbor. Jesus' parables feature some sort of extravagance like this, like giving a bunch of prisoners the opportunity which they take to risk their good time, to risk maybe even their lives. And it asks the question, are you willing to admit that it may just be the enemy who saves you? Now, Jesus is shrewd. He knows the story starts out with the guy who's testing him, asking him, who is my neighbor? But Jesus switches it because he knows that we have enemies. And about our enemies, we nurture in our imagination all sorts of assumptions about how our enemies will act, what kind of character that they have. We develop preconceived ideas. We say to ourselves, yeah, I know his or her type. I've seen them lots of times before, that kind of people. I know the problems they have, the character traits. I know what to expect of them. So before the enemy acts, we act because we are so convinced that we know the truth about the other. So Jesus gives us this parable to ask the question, who is your neighbor? But he knows that inherent in that story is the question not just who is your neighbor, but who is your enemy? And then after you ask the question, who is your enemy, the question goes on further. Can you believe that your enemy might become the one who saves you? That your enemy proves to be neighbor? Parables. Jesus' parables. They're designed to mess with our minds. They're designed to convert us, to start to see the world differently, to change our perception of the world, to shock us and disrupt the way that we think about things. So that when God gives us one of these parables, in the words of Jesus, it's so confusing. Sometimes we just want to ignore it and pass it on by instead of recognizing what God has given us in these parables. God has given us a gift to begin to imagine the world differently, to see the possibilities that abound in our lives. Old ideas all of a sudden are challenged, they clash, and it changes our perception. And I shared that story of the guard and the prisoners this morning, and maybe that story works for you and maybe it doesn't. And that's okay either way, but the real question is, as you hear this parable of Jesus, search your mind and your heart and ask the question, who is your enemy? And then put their name, their face, their long list of expected character traits into this story, and now they are the Samaritan and you are the one bleeding in the ditch. You are the one whose life is flowing out, and all the good guys and gals pass on by and ignore you. They have, of course, the most noble reasons in the world, but nevertheless, they've just passed you by. And your enemy is the one who bends down to you. Can you see it? Can you see yourself in that ditch? Can you see your enemy bending down to stop your bleeding? Can you see your enemy as the one who lifts you up, bandages your wound, pours olive oil on it to cleanse it and to heal it, lifts you up and puts you into bed and tends your wounds and watches over you all night long and then pays for your recovery? Can you see that? Can you see that world beginning to form? Given that image in your head, with that image in your head, now, how do you see the world differently afterwards? You and I, we all know it's been a terribly, terribly painful week in the life of our nation. We know that there are all sorts of people out there who are in tremendous pain. We are in pain in solidarity with them. We're concerned about them, their losses. We're concerned about our future as a nation. We ask the question, where do we go from here? As a nation, how do we get out of this downward spiral? I think to that very situation, Jesus gives this story. Not as an automatic, easy answer, but to give us the right question, to ask who is our neighbor. Can we be the ones who prove to be neighbor first? This parable is there to help people change the way they look at the world, the way they look at themselves, the way they look at people that they had come to assume were their enemies, because they need to see the world differently. We all need to see the world differently. Jesus is saying something along the line of speaking to us and saying, you be the change. Participate in it. Participate in this new reality that's coming to pass right under our noses. Be part of that change, because God is working on us, bringing something new, and we can be part of it. Just look and listen. It's dawning on us, this new day. This new day is dawning on us, a new reality. God is giving us the possibilities. But Jesus knows, as he speaks to his disciples, as he speaks to us, that God will not do what we can do for ourselves. God gives us the love. God gives us the vision. God gives us the spiritual gifts and the strength. God gives us the possibilities, but God is not going to do it for us. We cannot just wait around for it to happen all by itself. It's up to us answer the question, so who proved neighbor? And the question is, having experienced this love of God, having experienced ourselves this love of God, now will we be the ones who don't walk by, but reach out to those in need?